As an entrepreneur, you know you need commercial insurance protection, but do you have the right types of policies in place and the necessary amount of coverage? If you're making one or more of these mistakes, the answer may be no. Today, we're going to talk about not having no or faulty managed liability insurance, lack of cybersecurity insurance and social engineering fraud, and a lack of proper liability limits. On today's episode, we're talking with Jeff Goldenberg with Assured Partners. Jeff is a property and casualty as well as benefits producer, and we're going to talk about the things that Jeff sees on a daily basis and helps his clients to address to avoid these mistakes on this episode of Let's Make Work Optional.
Welcome to this episode of Let's Make Work Optional with True Wealth & Company in Overland Park, Kansas. True Wealth & Company incorporates strategies and products of the super rich to help you reach your financial goals and make work optional. And now, here's Brian Sarf, President and CEO of True Wealth & Company.
Welcome to Let's Make Work Optional. I'm Brian Paulson. We're here every Tuesday at 5 a.m., and I hope you are too. You can find the Let's Make Work Optional podcast on iTunes, Anchor.fm, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. All right, Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me, how did you get into the business? What makes you passionate about what you do with helping businesses to help their employees as well as protect themselves?
Well, I've been pretty much in a service type industry most of my working career. I've worked in the restaurant and food service industry in management, owned my own business in the appliance repair world, and worked in a nonprofit managing an educational department at the Jewish Community Center. So I think my background as a business owner and then having experience working in an organization and kind of the networking that goes along with that, you know, a lot of different aspects in a nonprofit, I think has made this industry a very good fit for me.
And I know you've got a lot of experience and focus with your clients that are entrepreneurs and business owners, focusing a lot of times on businesses that have 100 employees or so. But you've also got the niche of really diving in and helping out nonprofit organizations as well.
Yeah, I found out as soon as I got into the business that nonprofits were a very natural fit for me. They don't necessarily fit the size of some of the for-profit businesses that we typically work with, but the relationships are invaluable and very sustainable in terms of building more business. We're all in this to make a living, and along the way, we want to be able to help people as much as we can. But on the nonprofit side, it's very natural. There's boards connected to every organization. There's other staff people and a lot of different connections. It really feeds itself.
How do the needs differ?
You know, when you're working with a for-profit company, and this is totally okay, but for-profit is for-profit. You know, it's about the bottom line. There are obviously there are a lot of great companies out there that are very mission-driven. They do a lot for their communities. They employ lots of people, and that's terrific. But when you're a partner to one of those companies, you're really just a professional partner. When you're working with a nonprofit, you're very much an engaged partner, almost, you know, like a founder, like a board member. It's just a different level of partnership, you know, where a for-profit company, you know, takes difficult expenses and finds different ways to accommodate those. Nonprofits don't have quite as many options. They're very reliant on their partners who care about their mission to help them and see that through. Sometimes the solutions aren't all that great. I mean, sometimes there aren't any, but it's not the type of thing where you just drop off a renewal and say, well, sorry, this is high this year. You really take into consideration, you know, how are they actually going to pay for this and help them to work through the solution and work through the problems and try to make it better.
One thing I love about working with you and I think makes a huge difference for the clients that we send your way and the folks you work with is that this is not a transactional business. It certainly can be. But what is really important is to really get under the covers about the business itself and understand what's important. What are the challenges they're experiencing? Tell me about how you really get to become more of a partner with them and really get to understand their goals, much like we do when we're trying to work with them on their financial plan.
It's interesting. There are some companies out there, some clients that are certainly good clients. As far as having a working relationship where you really feel like a partner, sometimes they're not looking for that, and that's okay. You have to recognize that and kind of keep your distance so that you're not in their way, but you're there when you need them. With the others, it's keeping that line of communication open all the time. They're working on some strategic growth. You want to know what they're working on before it comes to fruition because it can have insurance implications. And we want to be there to help and advise on that. It could be that they're looking for some professional guidance somewhere that is not our area of expertise, but I may have someone in my network who's very, very good at that and can make that introduction. That's currency to me. So I take as much pride in doing that a lot of times as I do making a deal. It's really kind of fun in that way.
I mean, you make a very interesting point that some people, they're just in it for, tell me what the policy is, what's the price going to be, let's run with it. Very transactional. I think that kind of becomes a learned behavior because a lot of folks are used to their own personal and their property and casualty at home, and they've probably been with the same company forever. What guidance would you have for somebody that maybe has treated their insurance more as a transactional process? How do you get them to break out of that and start looking at you more as a partner?
You know, regardless of whether it's your homeowner's insurance, your auto, or it's a business, big or small, you're spending a significant amount of money on a product. And it's on a product you hope you never have to use. So it's really on you as the customer to be kind of proactive in that relationship. And you've been with someone for a long time and you trust everything is okay, and it probably is okay, but you don't know without asking. And it does get to a point where some of those relationships are taken for granted. Certainly the business side can be taken for granted that everything is status quo. If there's no questions, we'll see you next year, or maybe we'll see you in a couple of years. We don't have to talk that often. And, you know, this is coming from the insurance professional that does this every day. As a business owner, you're not looking at insurance every day. So it's really something where you want to interact with that person to a point that's comfortable. But, you know, really, in my world, I find it very beneficial to be in touch with my clients as often as I can. That doesn't mean that it's weekly or monthly. It just depends on the client. But I want to be there often enough that I'm involved with decisions they make that can have insurance implications. I want them to see me as a partner they can utilize in a lot of different ways. But if you've been with someone for a long time, there's no reason you can't speak to other brokers or other insurance professionals and find out what they're doing. Just sit down with them, be open and honest about what works, what doesn't work, what are issues to you. If there are really no issues to discuss, ultimately it's sales. You know, if there's only nothing to discuss, we'll move on and leave the relationship alone. Part is friends. But if there are some problems that come up that maybe were assumed to be just part of doing business, you know, maybe there's a solution out there that wasn't identified already.
So bottom line, don't use you as a person to just deal with claims.
Yeah,
speak your mind.
No, there's a lot more. There's a lot more that goes on, and I want to be used for a lot more than that.
Yeah.
When it comes to just being used for claims, the experience is either, and I have no control over that once it's happened, the experience is either good or bad.
Yeah.
And if it's not so good, there's a good chance that someone will be looking for a new relationship.
Perfect. Well, I know one thing that we hear about pretty much on a weekly basis. If you're listening to the news, you're hearing about somebody getting hacked, somebody getting swindled by somebody. So something that if you haven't been familiarizing yourself with it, you should think about it, particularly if your business ties anything to the internet. If your data is anywhere on the internet, is cybersecurity and social engineering fraud. Tell me a little about what you see. What are the distinctions between them? What are the things that you're trying to help your clients to address with those policies?
It comes down to that regular communication. You know, when I started in this business a little bit over 8 years ago, that was a new line of coverage. No one really knew what cyber liability was all about. It was something you could pick and choose different aspects of the coverage. There were a few people that had learned a lot about it. There were some that were becoming kind of self-proclaimed experts. But what we saw, what's evolved over time, is that these policies you could kind of parse together were involving, you know, claims that took place were covering multiple lines of coverage. And instead of giving the client and even the agent the opportunity to put that together in a way that maybe left some gaps, they said, look, the carrier started putting this together as a full-blown policy, whether some of the coverage was baked into the normal liability or whether it was something that was actually from maybe another company on another paper. But that's what they started doing. It's pretty broad coverage. The more exposure that's out there, the more business that you're doing online, the more you really need to be covered. The social engineering fraud is just the latest piece of it. And that's just another one. You're not going to find something like that that's just thrown in. That's something you need to make sure that if that's an exposure, that it's addressed. And really, anybody has that exposure. That's not something that only affects big companies or small companies or people transferring money on a regular basis. It can involve a small company that transfers money every so often to pay a large bill. I know of many that have been hit by this. I know people that I'm working with as a prospective client, and this wasn't even something we had gotten to the point to discuss yet. And in the meantime, they got hit with one of these social engineering fraud claims. Unfortunately, they didn't have coverage for it. So it's something that we'll address when we get to that point, but it's a good lesson learned for everyone else out there.
it's fascinating when you start looking at me being the chief technical officer for the company. It's interesting when you start looking at what comes across. We've actually been doing internal training on cybersecurity and social engineering to educate our team on what does this look like. One of the most common social engineering approaches is to find out who the CEO of the company is and then create an email that looks like your letterhead, send it to your own employees and say, hey, I need this information and I need it in 5 minutes because I'm going into a meeting. Are there opportunities that you look at when they're putting those type of policies together, whether it be training or policies, procedures that you can help your clients to put in place that helps to keep their coverage costs down?
Yeah, more and more we're seeing the carriers are getting very involved in this, and it really comes down from them. When you go to look at one of these policies and fill out the application, it's incredible. The application, it's almost word for word. The questions that they ask about which best practices are you following or have you adopted, that's what's required. So when people say, well, what should we be doing to avoid these problems? And insurance doesn't prevent anything from happening, though it does recommend some pretty significant best practices. If you look through the application, it's telling you what you ought to be doing. And if you answer no, the next step is going to be, in order to get this coverage, you'll need to implement those practices. So it's really a good exercise to go through these types of things on a regular basis and see what you're doing and what you're not doing, even if you already have it. If you're just automatically renewing something and assuming everything has stayed the same, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's really best to take a look at those applications every year and see what they look like. And most of the carriers are requiring that. But that's something that we've begun to do more and more proactively.
Well, and it's amazing the enhancements that, you know, in our space, FINRA and the SEC, every year there's lessons that are learned in this space and there are new enhancements that are added to it. So just because I've got all my ducks in a row in 2019,
right,
doesn't mean I'm not going to learn some new tricks from you when I'm talking to you about our cybersecurity policy and things that I need to put in place.
Right.
So again, going back to, you really, as an entrepreneur, can't be looking at your PNC and benefits person as a turnkey. It's a partnership. You can really help them protect their business beyond just getting policy.
I would almost go so far as to say that prospective clients that we talk to, if they don't view the relationship as one that is kind of an ongoing relationship where that's productive for them, they may not always be the best fit for us. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean there aren't different types of clients that we have that are a little bit more turnkey, that are a little more commoditized. But in insurance, the policy itself may be somewhat of a commodity, but that relationship and the conversation that goes back and forth throughout the year is definitely not a commodity. It's kind of been the way it's kind of evolved and the way it's looked over the years, but it's really not what it's evolved to. I mean, people generally don't take their taxes to a couple different CPAs each year and say, hey, let's see which tax return comes out the best. That's just not what you do. But it's amazing how people want to shop for insurance that way, rather than shop for a broker who they can trust and know that really any broker out there can place my insurance business where it needs to be placed. What they ought to be looking for is what goes on to get to that point. And that's what we try to bring across. We get to know them. And if they'll tell us, if they're open and honest with us about what works and what doesn't work and where they want to see it going, we can be helpful in helping in providing solutions. If all they want to do is shop for price, it's harder because we know that ultimately they're going to be shopping us for price too. We know they're not getting the best deal. They're not getting the best value on this product that they're buying that costs a lot of money.
Now, you brought up a term that I'm not sure everybody on listening online here is maybe familiar with. Tell everybody what's the difference between a broker and an agent.
Okay, so an agent is basically a representative of a specific company. So like a direct writing agent, say your neighborhood State Farm or American Family or Farmers, those are agents. Those folks work for those insurance companies. A broker is actually, it's kind of what it sounds like. We have relationships with dozens and dozens of carriers, and through wholesalers, we have relationships with that many more. Those are relationships where we're placing millions of dollars of business with individual carriers every year. So our clients benefit from those relationships and that the leverage that those relationships include. So if we don't like the way a relationship is going with a particular carrier for a particular client, we'll move that to benefit the client. Where the client is with a direct writer, say, with an agent, they get sideways with that agency for some reason, they have to go find a new relationship. Where with us, the broker is the constant.
Yeah, it's very similar to our industry where there's fiduciary versus suitability advisors. Fiduciary being the one that's out there looking out for your best interests, tend to be a relationship. And once they understand your needs, go out and find the solution that fits.
Exactly.
Whereas you see the suitability advisor more tied to the specific company pushing their products. You know, as long as it's suitable, it's kosher to go forward.
Right.
Which is, again, why I love working with you, because I know that you are in a consultant role. So we've talked about cybersecurity. We've talked about social engineering policies. It is amazing the companies that end up not putting the processes in place up front and relying on their policy. It's amazing the percent that end up out of business that are small businesses as a result of a cybersecurity hack. So it's not something at all to take trivially. Something equally big in the news right now is there's definitely been a focus more on directors and officers insurance, as well as employment practices liability insurance. You know, with everything that we're hearing with harassment cases and the like, will you tell me a little bit about what do you see where employers, entrepreneurs are making mistakes by not having these policies?
In the nonprofit space, directors and officers liability is a must. You're going to have a hard time finding good quality board members for any type of significant organization if you don't have directors and officers liability, because that is what protects them should a suit be filed against the organization. Now, employment practices liability, and you can also have directors and officers liability in the for-profit space as well. It's a different kind of animal. But when you have a business that has a board, it's important to be addressing that as well, because it is a break in a shift in the liability. The employment practices liability applies to everyone, and it applies to everyone in the same way. If you're hiring employees, if you have employees, they are hired at some point and at some point probably terminated. They're not necessarily fired. They can retire, leave voluntarily, whatever the case may be. But they are going to come on board and they are going to leave. And they are going to interact along the way. And you've got to be covered for that. That is, in the insurance world, the area of claims that are kind of the low-hanging fruit are employment practices claims and work comp claims, because these are areas where employees are suing their employer for compensation. It's something you just must have.
I hear on a regular basis there's a huge distinction from a tax standpoint of a 1099 versus a W-2. I'm sure you get conversations all the time where somebody says, well, I don't have any W-2 employees. They're all 1099. Why do I need employment practices liability coverage?
Well, unless those 1099 employees carry their own, then they're considered your employees at that point. Your insurance will pick them up. It comes up with work comp a lot.
Yep.
And there are very strict definitions about what is a 1099 employee really supposed to look like. And there's probably a lot of people that aren't quite in compliance on that. That's not something that we try to dictate necessarily as the insurance broker, the insurance consultant. We try to make sure to the best of our understanding we're giving the right advice. But yeah, those are two areas where disgruntled employees or employees who don't really care to work are have a way to try to get themselves compensated through insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got several former IT execs that now are running their own practices. And that tends to be a 1099 space. So
yeah.
For all you guys listening, that doesn't mean that you step away from the employment practices liability insurance just because they're a 1099. You still need to protect yourself.
When you have a 1099 employee, they are being covered for the most part by... They are taking on the insurance of the contractor unless they have it themselves. If they have it themselves and provide proof of it, let's say it's professional liability of some sort, then they need to show that proof of insurance before you engage and before you contract them. That way, if there's a claim, it's on them first. And when that's not the case, it's covered by your company's insurance. Sometimes the carrier's not real happy about that. They'll probably pay the claim. You might be shopping for new insurance the next year because they feel like you took on some risk that was not explained from the start. Mm-hmm. So it's just important to get that out all on the table. And that's an area where a broker can be helpful in kind of unraveling all that. There's a lot of different instances where it's just a matter of mapping it out and understanding who's aligned with who.
One other topic that I think we hear a lot about or think about individually, but maybe we need to look at it also from an enterprise standpoint. You get a teen driver, you're probably going to have an umbrella policy because now your risk has gone through the roof. We incorporate ourselves as entrepreneurs and business owners to protect ourselves, but there is also a place for umbrella insurance in the business space. Tell me about that.
For sure. So what an umbrella means is exactly what it sounds like. It's excess liability. It covers your different areas of liability and extends them. So one area that it doesn't extend would be directors and officers liability. That's just because that's written as a separate policy. It just doesn't do it. But it would extend your general liability. It would extend your auto liability. It could extend your professional liability. It could extend employment practices liability. It's got to be written that way. But that's the way it's designed. So you know, most policies in general for any, you know, small mid-sized company, unless they're doing something really unusual, their general liability is probably a $1 million limit with a $2 million aggregate for a whole year. And the umbrella would extend that by whatever amount of the umbrella you have, you know, starting at $1 million and going up from there. It just depends on what you're trying to protect. In auto, you know, it doesn't take much to get into a $1 million claim. Unfortunately, it's not so much the cars, it's the lives involved. And same thing with personal lines, liability, same thing. Someone's home is insured and carries a certain amount of liability. They have probably, I don't know, $300,000 to $500,000 combined single limit liability on their autos. And just think about how much time we spend in our cars if we're working, if we have kids, what everybody's doing, especially with distracted driving and everything else that goes on. So that umbrella, it's not terribly expensive coverage. And it's really pretty critical. If you've got people on the road, you need to have it at the very least.
Absolutely.
It can be another tool as well for a business. Maybe it's in a small retail space. Maybe it's maybe an IT company that's in a small retail space, and their general liability is at $1 million, $2 million, and their landlord requires $5 million in general liability because people come in and out of that space. They can't get a policy is written for $5 million, but they can buy an umbrella that will extend that, and it costs a lot less.
Outstanding. Any other topics? What else do you see out there when you're working with folks? What are lessons learned they need to think about?
I really did kind of get back to something I said earlier. The biggest thing is taking some time to review this and taking that process seriously every year. And as things unfold, you know, don't be shy about contacting your insurance broker, really any professional for that matter, when you have a question. I mean, the legal profession has the worst reputation with this. You call them, you're going to get charged. I mean, you call us, you'll never get charged. This is not the way it works. We want to be there to help prevent issues later. We've really adopted a practice. I think it was more out of compliance. But it's really a great practice of sitting down and proactively going through a checklist of coverages that are in place. If they're in place fully, if they're partially in place, do the limits need to be addressed? And we have to do this every single year. So you can imagine when this was passed over to us, everyone said, oh my gosh, we got to go out and fill all that stuff out for every client. That's going to take forever. You know, that's not going to be very productive. But if you think about it, it's quite the opposite. You've got an opportunity to get in front of almost every single client, certain clients it doesn't apply, and go through every line of coverage they have. And they have to sign off on it and say, you know, I've asked you about this line of coverage every single year, and you said you don't need it. We're not talking about, do you have a, you know, watercraft or a plane? We're talking about maybe some professional liability coverage, or maybe they don't have cyber and they ought to. And we bring it up. They're letting us know. So from a compliance standpoint, they're saying they've declined it. But as far as the conversation, it's bringing it up every year in a way that's very constructive. And, you know, it's all about execution. I think everybody can say they do that. It's something that we really go out of our way to make sure that gets done. Personally, I probably get involved in a lot of that to a fault. I like to go out to every renewal. If it requires a pre-renewal meeting as well as a renewal meeting, I just feel like any time in front of my clients is beneficial.
So if somebody's thinking about either sitting down and taking your advice and working with their broker, or if they're reaching out to you, what's a timeline? You know, how far in advance should they be thinking about having this conversation so that you have the time you need to really help take them through that thought process?
You know, I think on the smallest accounts, they usually say 45 to 60 days is kind of ideal. That doesn't mean things don't get done at the 11th hour. We try to work a lot kind of off renewal, both with benefits and property and casualty. For us to sit down with someone post-renewal, you know, that's a new business opportunity that we've never met, and start talking with them, if we can identify some different levers that can be pulled that might help them contain insurance costs, might help them to move forward with some employer initiatives, anything like that, we can get started with them right away and have that whole year. Take control of that account early, and then we can help them through the renewal. Because the renewal is kind of a messy period right at the end, and you know, everybody's trying to get a lot of things done. But if you can work on these things throughout the year and we create that timeline for you, it's a much more productive relationship. So we like to get involved as early as possible. That doesn't mean that we're renewing anything. In fact, half the time, we're not even looking to quote anything. There aren't too many brokers out there that don't have the ability to place insurance business with a carrier. That's a given, or they wouldn't be in business. What's going to differentiate people is what they're doing to get to that point. That's where we want to spend a lot of time. If we're selling something, that's what we're selling, is that expertise. You can't do that when it's just a few weeks out from that renewal. So when a broker brings you that renewal and it's kind of the last minute, you don't really like the look out of it, I would say definitely give me a call. I'd love to talk with you. don't be surprised if I'd say, you know what, go ahead and take the renewal, but let's make a date to get together in the next 30 to 60 days once the dust is settled and see what's what and see what we can do moving forward. If there's really something to do, we can certainly move the needle after the fact.
Well, I want to make one more plug and extend an invite to come back and talk to us as well, because I know we've not touched on what you do with high net worth property and casualty. So for our entrepreneurs and the executives in their practice that may have outstripped what they really can do with their current insurance provider, this is more for personal lines, but certainly an interesting space to talk as well.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Hey, Jeff, how can everybody get a hold of you?
I have a phone and email. My email address is easy if you're looking for that. It's jeff.goldenberg@assuredpartners.com. And my phone number is 913-236-3060. I'm pretty much online all the time, so you need to reach me. If it's a time where I've turned my phone off, when I turn it back on, I'll be getting right back to you.
And that's Goldenberg, B-E-R-G.
That's correct.
All right, perfect. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Let's Make Work Optional from True Wealth & Company. I'm your host, Brian Paulson, and this week we've had Jeff Goldenberg from Assured Partners with us. We'll be back next Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. Be sure to spread the word about this podcast to your friends and family, and don't keep us a secret. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, connect with us on LinkedIn, and don't ever forget, invest wisely, save early, let's make work optional.
You've been listening to Let's Make Work Optional from True Wealth & Company. Visit us online at retirewithtrue.com or call 913-653-TRUE. That's 913-653-8783. All matters discussed during this program are for informational purposes only. This podcast in no way shall be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents in any other state than Kansas or where otherwise prohibited. Topics should be discussed with your advisor prior to implementation. Advisory and insurance services offered through True Wealth & Company, LLC, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas.